Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting to order. The mayor is out of town today, so I will be acting in his place, chairing the meeting. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
McConnell, Klontz.
Here.
Simmons.
Here.
Akers, Skaynes.
Here.
Milton.
Here.
Castellon.
Here.
Your Honor, you have a quorum.
Excellent. Well, our first item, and I was very glad to hear this well-publicized, is the update regarding the police department presented by Jeff Matthews, Chief Matthews.
Thank you, Your Honor, members of the board. It's my pleasure to update you on the great work of our officers and professional staff. They're doing a great job. I'm honored to tell their story. Today, we will cover four topics. First, we will discuss our department reorganization and how these changes will continue to guide us as we develop and realize our mission. Then we'll take a deep dive into several performance measures. We'll review our crime picture, call loads, call types, and explore how these are impacting our workforce. Third, we'll cover some of our 2019 accomplishments. And finally, we will look at our 2020 objectives. You may recall that last year we added a fourth patrol sector. Here is our current sector map. The black dividing line is new and a major aspect of our reorganization. I'll expand on that shortly. At one time, patrol sectors aligned along the board wards. Now, Ward 1 encompasses all of 340 and a portion of 310 and 320 between 248 and 76. Ward 2 captures the eastern portion of Sector 320 and most of Sector 310 along and north of 248. Ward 3 covers most of 330 and a small portion of 320 along the lake. Highlighted in gray, you will see the percentages of calls that each of these sectors produced last year. As you can see, 320 and 340 account for a large percentage of our workload. If we were to plot all of our calls, 76 Country Boulevard accounts for a large number of the calls, as well as our hotels on the west end of 76. Our top accident locations continue to be the roundabout and Highway 65 at the Branson Hills and Bee Creek intersections, that whole interchange up there. We continue to evaluate our workloads, and we're considering a comprehensive sector realignment to better equalize our workload across all sectors. Additional sectors could be added, or our current boundaries may be modified to better allocate workloads. Our goal is to align our patrol sectors along natural geographic boundaries and ensure each produces a similar call volume. With our new reorganization, patrol sergeants and officers are being assigned to sectors for a year at a time, and we're hoping that will provide an opportunity to develop long-term partnerships in those neighborhoods and create sustainable solutions to problems in those areas. This slide highlights our organizational chart. January the 18th of this year, we launched this model to help us focus on our major objectives. Those objectives include geographic accountability, succession planning for the department, employee development, and community engagement. As you can see, we have divided into two different work groups there. We have two lieutenants assigned to field operations. We divided the city into two patrol districts. That's the black line that was on the earlier slide. Lieutenant Hogue is our south commander and manages sectors 320 and 330. Lieutenant Barnwell manages the north patrol district and 310 and 340. Both of our lieutenants have patrol sectors or districts and support units with collateral duties. This alignment more equally assigns workload across the department, provides us greater focus on patrol operations and neighborhood accountability. Patrol commanders are responsible for all district crime and neighborhood issues in their areas. We're holding them accountable for community relationships and working with neighborhoods to reduce crime and improve livability. Patrol commanders manage three shifts, patrol shifts, and report directly to Assistant Chief Schmidt. Lieutenant Jones commands the Support Services Division, and reports to the police chief. His division includes dispatch services and an administrative sergeant who supervises our community service officer, animal control, personnel and recruiting, and code enforcement. Again, this model places an emphasis on geographic accountability over the 24-hour clock. We believe this policing model enhances our opportunities to partner with neighborhoods and improve quality of life issues. We're excited about our future and looking forward to where our employees will take us. Here's the Uniform Crime Report, which is our report card to the community. It's our true crime picture. Just as a reminder, UCR, Uniform Crime Report, is a standardized reporting system that tracks crime across time. We actually track Part 1 crime, the higher offenses, and Part 2 crimes, the lower offenses, that we often refer to as nuisance offenses. As you can see, 2019 crime is down 4.7% over our 2018 totals. That's really an impressive number, considering that 2018, we were down 14% over 2017. Additional decreases will become increasingly more difficult, but we're always committed to working to improve Branson's quality of life. Let me share a couple highlights from this table. First, let's look at the robberies. We're up over 2018, but there's good news. Our team identified suspects in all but two of these offenses and filed charges on them. We believe we know the other two, but lack the probable cause to make the arrest. And as things go in police work, there's a huge legal difference between what we think and having probable cause to secure a warrant. The 29% reduction in aggravated assaults is significant and directly linked to the hard work of our employees. Branson PD has a long and storied history of personnel knowing our local criminal element. Our current staff is no different and often just needs a picture or a first name to identify a suspect. Most of our crime, including these violent crimes, such as the aggravated assaults, are linked to illegal drug use or abuse. Our Part 2 offenses, including the drug offenses, remain somewhat flat, although we did investigate 31 drug overdoses last year, including six overdose deaths. Our opioid response team we launched in 2018 remains active. Last year, our response team handled over 100 referrals, with about 80% of those contacted agreeing to enter some type of help program. As you can see there, larceny, that's still our biggest crime driver and was basically flat last year. We're very proud of the vehicle theft decreases. Our officers and detectives continue to focus on auto thefts, as this category was up last year. Detectives worked hard to develop regional partnerships and now hold regular information sharing sessions with our regional law enforcement partners. And these numbers indicate that they're doing a great job. Sergeant Pat Gray supervises our investigative unit and is creating this culture of cooperation. Last October, in our brief before you, I mentioned the National Incident-Based Reporting System. This system will replace our current Uniform Crime Report, and we must transition away from UCR to NIBRS by January of 2021. We're currently working with our RMS provider, Cody Systems, to ensure this transition is as seamless as practical. NIBRS will look and feel much different than UCR. NIBRS tracks and records all crime incidents, where UCR only records the highest crime incident. For example, if an intoxicated suspect steals a car at gunpoint, under UCR, we only record the robbery. Under NIBRS, we'll record the DWI, the robbery, and the vehicle theft. As you can see, there's not an increase in crime, but the increase in crime incidents makes it appear as so that there's an increase in crime. Our five-year crime picture looks really good. The chart at the bottom left documents a 22% reduction in Part 1 crime between 2015 and last year. That's an impressive decrease attributed to the hard work of our staff and focused community. I'd also like to highlight the five-year comparison listed in the table. The table compares violent crime and property crime over the past 5 years. I draw your attention to the 15% decrease in violent crime last year. That reduction is linked to the last slide where we talked about aggravated assaults and those decreases. Our entire team is working very well together. We share intelligence across all work groups and aggressively catalog incidents with our crime analyst, who in turn distributes daily information intelligence products. Our internal communications are solid, and we continue to grow our regional crime analysis presence. We're increasing the number of Branson-specific intelligence products and sharing those with our partners at all levels, at the local, county, state, and federal levels. Here's a snapshot of last year's top calls for service. I'll highlight just a few. We continue to focus on domestic assaults and regularly work with our community partners to provide immediate short-term support for our victims. Our crime analyst is developing a system to better track repeat offenders by both victim name, suspect name, and location. Last year, we enhanced our reporting process to better document domestic assault offenses, and we're seeing improved investigations. We believe our strong community partnerships, comprehensive investigations, and internal tracking will help break the cycle of violence for at least some of our victims. Mental illness calls continue to grow. Last October, in our brief before you, we detailed our pledge to complete the International Association of Chiefs of Police One Mind campaign. This is a program which requires us to train all of our staff in a 40-hour crisis intervention course. Many officers have completed the training, and we are slated to send more this year. One area not highlighted in the crisis intervention discussion is officer care. Last year, our industry lost twice as many officers to suicide as we did to violent on-duty deaths. To address our needs, we're sending officers to crisis incident stress management training. This training is focused on the psychological needs of our officers and is critical in our peer support needs. Regionally, there is no peer support response capacity, so it's essential we address these needs both at the local level and the regional level. We're in communication with Southwest Missouri police chiefs and have secured broad support for forming a regional officer peer support team to address police officer needs in the region. Branson PD is taking the lead in developing this regional officer response team, and we're proud that we're moving forward in this area. The last call I'd like to discuss is the commercial alarms. The majority of these calls are false, however, each requires a two-officer response. Our city ordinance includes a fine-based system that penalizes business owners for increased numbers of annual false alarms. This ordinance mandates alarmed businesses have a city-issued alarm permit, but attaches no fee for that permitting process. The fee is attached to the increased number of false alarms, not to the permit. A fee-based commercial alarm permit will improve management of the permitting process and provide us a cost-sharing mechanism to recover a portion of the cost required to manage this permitting process. We will work with the administrator's office to develop a plan to bring before you for a proposal to amend this ordinance. Now let's transition to dispatch. This table highlights incoming and outgoing call transfers. Taney County has two PSAPs, or Public Safety Answering Points. That's the Taney County Sheriff's Department and the Branson Police Department. Taney County Ambulance operates their own dispatch, but it's not an official PSAP. Daily, dispatch staff receive and transfer incoming emergency calls between all three of these agencies. Branson is the blue category on the table. And as you can see, Branson Dispatch received over twice as many incoming transfer calls from Taney County as we sent them. This is important, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. The chart on the right represents our incoming calls for between 2016 and last year. In 2018, our PSAP transitioned to a new phone system, and during the three-month installation period last summer, summer of 18, we were unable to track our phone calls. So that's the asterisk on 2018, where we lost that 3 months' worth of data. Our 2019 stats include the new phone system, and they were quite eye-opening. We all knew our dispatch center was busy, but this data shows we were busier than we thought we were. The new phone system tracks all incoming and outgoing calls. The inserted table breaks out all incoming and outgoing calls. I bring your attention to the delta between 911 calls and incoming admin calls. The incoming admin calls are the calls on the old published non-emergency line. There are many reasons we're transitioning away from the non-emergency phone number, and this data highlights some of those reasons for the transition and why we were encouraging callers to dial 911 for all first responder needs. Our dispatchers are well-trained and quickly triage incoming 911 calls and prioritize them according to our call matrix. I'm sure you're focused on the 52,883 calls listed on the non-emergency calls, jumping out of the chart above. That's a lot of phone calls. In total, our dispatch center handled over 100,000 calls. That's a tremendous amount of workload in that little dispatch center. And remember, our dispatch center is typically staffed by just two dispatchers. Our dispatchers stay busy. On a side note, this past month, January over January of last year, we're already up about 150 calls just January this year over January last year. This slide, here's a look at 2018 and 2019 dispatch comparisons. Just as a reminder, CD calls are all dispatched incidents. BR calls are PD calls. And then the BF calls are the fire department calls. Most dispatch calls require a police or a fire report number. However, some, such as BOLOs and things like that, do not require a police or a fire number, therefore the difference in the totals. You can see all dispatch activity is up. Again, we only received 16,607 incoming 911 calls, and we dispatched almost 33,000 total calls last year. Almost half of our 911 calls were received on the administrative or old non-emergency line. The inserted table identifies additional duties our dispatchers perform when they have time. I'll pause there just for a second, when they have time. All of these tasks require separate system entries. To keep in mind that when completing these tasks, the dispatcher remains connected with the CAD system, tethered to the 911 phone line, and stationed at a primary dispatch terminal. We still have dispatch vacancies, but we recently posted dispatch positions and received over 40 applications. The large application pool is directly linked to the dispatcher reclassification that our city administrator developed and passed through last year. And we're very appreciative, Stan, of that work. Our dispatchers are making a difference in our community. Our team is conducting background investigations for our open dispatcher positions, and we're hopeful that we will be fully staffed by summertime when we hit our stride. Here's a portion of our 2019 accomplishments. I'd like to highlight just a few. We've already discussed the crime reductions, and some of you attended our recent badge pinning ceremonies where we recognized our new officers and our canine Cobra. Although we hired 8 officers last year, we still have 4 open positions and a vacant sergeant position. And those 4 open positions you granted us last year in January with the 2019 budget. We're still working to fill those. We'll post those vacancies next week or the week after. We've not publicized some of the other accomplishments. Last year, we transitioned away from to a level 3A daily wear ballistic vest from one that was not as strong. Although most of our employees, almost all of our employees have completed our ASHER training. This is our active threat training that we do in coordination with all of our regional partners. Our social media platform continues to grow. Last year, we had several posts that reached over 50,000 people. National Night Out 2019 was a huge success. 16 individual parties, and we're planning for 2020. Tuesday, October the 6th. This summer, we will host our second annual Summer Teen Engagement Program. This is an outreach program that provides an opportunity for us to invest in a select group of eighth graders transitioning into the ninth grade. And finally, last year, our Citizens Police Academy graduates formed the Branson Citizens Police Academy Alumni Association. Some of them may be in the room today. And then please allow me to boast on one more of our accomplishments. The photo on the right was taken at a 2019 National Night Out event. Officer Corey Hozick and this young lady flexed their muscles to make us one of the 2020 winners in the Department of Justice Cops Office Community Policing in Action Photo Contest winners. We selected this photo over a large number of Branson PD photos. The other 11 national winners are on the left. My partner, Ted Martin, saw this picture and immediately pointed out just how awesome it is. The partnership between our two departments runs deep. I'm sure you can see why Chief Martin says this is an awesome picture.
I just wonder.
He staged it that way. And finally, moving into 2020, we're focused on improving our department. Here are our major objectives for 2020. Full deployment of our geographic policing assignments. This includes empowering our staff to develop community partnerships and deploy sustainable solutions to neighborhood problems. Succession planning is front and center. We have personnel in critical command positions that are or will be retirement eligible very soon. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have a large number of employees with less than 5 years of service. Succession planning is critical, and we're focused on a comprehensive plan that addresses our needs. We're developing our bench strength and investing in our employees to ensure we maintain optimum operational competencies. Much of our workforce is young, and we need to develop intermediate and advanced training for them. Our sergeants average just 3 years at rank, and our officers average 4 years at rank. That number drops to three when we pull out the four people that we have in training right now. All of our employees have training needs, and we're working to identify those individual needs so we can effectively address their training needs and the training needs across all work groups. The state mandates annual continuing education for officers and dispatchers. For years, our in-service training has mainly been conducted online. Most agencies across the country have transitioned away from sole source online training to a more in-house classroom and reality-based scenario trainings. We too are transitioning to this model. In-house training evaluates, elevates our proficiencies, increases confidence and understanding, and dramatically improves consistency across all police applications. For the foreseeable future, we will be sending select staff to train the trainer type courses so we can grow our instructor pool and develop a robust in-house training program. And then we will always remain engaged in the community. This year, we're focused on connecting with more neighborhoods, empowering our sergeants and officers to develop relationships with residents and our business community. Our goal is to work together, solve problems, and realize shared goals. Lastly, we continue to audit our policies to ensure our practices align with written directives, and then soon we will assign an officer to start the process of actually developing a Branson-specific standard operating procedure manual. As you can see, we have a full year planned. And at this time, Your Honor, open to any questions or comments you may have. That's our report.
Thank you. Normally, this is a session, a study session, where we have staff inform the council and discuss future items coming up. However, in the case of this report, and since it was well publicized, I would like to open this up to the audience also to ask questions, if that's all right with you, Chief Matthews.
That's fine.
Would you prepare to answer? So if we have anyone who's taken the time and trouble to come here and would like to ask a question, why, now would be the time to do so.
first times you won't hear much out of them, isn't it, Ryan?
Well, we're all a little bit afraid of the police, no matter where we see them.
Come on, come on.
And, well, let me open it up. I'll follow up with that later. But let me open it up to the council here. Do we have any questions?
It's got a couple of statements. Okay. Chief, I've noticed that the PR on social media is fantastic. I think it's very, very positive on your behalf and staff's behalf, and I commend them. But I got to ask a couple questions about the issues of larceny. So those are up or almost 1,000. You remove that issue of larceny, and of course, crime's way down. But can you give me some examples of what you guys would be doing to try to combat that huge number?
Sure. Those larcenies, the majority of those are retail theft.
Shoplifting?
Yes, sir. And we have three big drivers in the city for those numbers. Both of our supercenters are Walmarts. And then the Tanger Outlet Mall. We're in constant communication with management at all three facilities and doing everything we can to help them strengthen their systems so that we don't have those thefts.
The other question is just a statement of discussion back and forth. The positive effect of the public safety initiative seems like it's been pretty well effective. In your words, you sort of tell us and the people that are here what you felt the effect of the public safety initiative is and what the positive effect it's had on your department.
Sure. It's huge for us because in the last 2.5 years, our staffing has increased by 8 officers. I said we have 4 open positions and an open sergeant, but still our authorized strength has grown by 8. We have a crime analyst who's with us today who is helping us pinpoint where we need to deploy our resources. All of those things make us better. The equipment, most of our cars are less than 3 years old because of the lease purchase plan that Mr. Dobbins has come up with. We've got good technology. So that tax is providing us the ability to serve the community at heights that we've not served before.
About the communication equipment that was purchased, How has that been a positive effect?
It has
communication
been
with the sheriff and the state.
So we're not there yet. We're not on Moshwin. We're still waiting for Moshwin to kick in. We're looking for repeater sites and things like that. Still, the state is. So we're not there yet. But the systems that we have, we're using to the fullest that we can right now. Although we're not on Moshwin, we do have the body-worn cameras that everybody's wearing. We do have dash cameras that are linked with that same contract. So we've got the best equipment available right now.
The issue of the closing down of the problematic hotel or monthly or weekly stays, has that been a positive effect as far as the issues of crime and what had been happening in your calls there?
So, yes, I noted in the report that the hotels on the west end of the city are part of our call drivers. Well, as you know, we have a couple of them on the west end of the city right now that are closed. So there is a certain degree of displacement that occurs. But we're not seeing the issues concentrated like we did before the closures.
Last but not least, just the issue of the new building, how you think that might help your capabilities within the department as well. I know it, as far as distributing people out around town, a more central location is good. I get that.
So the central location, there's a misnomer about that. Our ability to get to somewhere in the city, you got to keep in mind that we try to keep our resources out in the city, ready for deployment at any time. But one of the things that central location will help us do, that increased square footage in that central location is going to give us better access to the community, or let me flip that, the community better access to us. Because we're building in a community room, something similar to this room right here, that will actually be the community's gathering place if they want. So that they can come in and they can hold their public meetings with us so that we can have that interaction with individual neighborhoods. That's the positive that we're looking for there.
The issue of the dispatchers, obviously concerned, you've only got a couple of them. And one of the things we promised back to the community in this process is we'd try to increase those numbers. Do you think that's sustainable to keep our dispatchers?
So I'm working with Mr. Manning right now and Stan, and we're developing a staffing study specific to dispatch needs. I think we have some needs, but right now, Mr. Skaines, I don't know what those needs are. We're looking at a couple of different formulas. One is a national standard for police 911 call centers that says you need to be able to answer 90% of your 911 calls within 10 seconds. We're there. We're doing that. But the problem is with two dispatchers, I'm not able to stay on the phone as long as I need to maybe give pre-arrival instructions and things like that. Now, you may remember we transferred almost 3,000 calls to TCAD. A lot of those pre-arrivals are taking place on the TCAD medical side, but we still have a need to provide our officers long-term, you know, through that dispatch until the officer arrival, information back to the officers. And quite honestly, sometimes we just don't have that time. But the staffing study that we're working on right now, I think we're going to be able to give the administrator and John some real tangible numbers that tells us this is where we really need to be.
Thank you, Chief.
I apologize. I just want to jump in here with the chief for a second, because we talk about the central location and the police department, but there's another reason we wanted that central location, and it's the fire department. They will have a place in the middle of our city where they can do training now, because not only are we going to have that community room, we're also going to have a very good training room that will allow the fire department to train at that facility, and will have their apparatus present in the middle of the city so they can respond anywhere. They'll still cover their areas, but when they're having training, if something were to occur, they'll have that quicker response time throughout the community. So I always want to focus. I don't want to just focus on the police department. It's the fire department, too, that we're trying to get this for, because that's truly what this public safety tax was meant to do, was to improve all of our emergency services. And secondly, on the item of dispatchers, we are working hard to bring you gentlemen a plan to help to increase those numbers, and part of that plan is, we've talked to you briefly about it, we're working with TCAD, where TCAD will actually join in with our dispatchers in our facility. They will be, that's where they will be housed. Their dispatchers will be housed with our dispatchers, which will also increase, will reduce response times and increase greater cooperation in our community and enhance the fire department's response times and make our citizens safer, because we'll be giving them an ambulance there quicker and have the fire guys not, in some instances, not having to roll on every call like they do now.
Alderman Castellano.
Chief Matthews, thank you. Great job presentation. I have a couple of questions and just wanted to follow up on. One is, do we have a vehicle ordinance where if someone's, you know, we are theft up for, where was it? Vehicle theft was 61, 96 the following year. Do we have an ordinance that if someone leaves their vehicle running, they also can get charged if it's stolen?
State statute?
Because I know Springfield had one. That's the reason I was asking. And their car theft has gone way down since they enforced it more and
more. Now, Mr. Skaines talked about our social media presence. That's one of the things that we hit hard and heavy during the winter months, were those warm-up thefts, reminding people not to do that.
And the other thing is, on the 911 hangups, do we call those back when they hang up on you? Was there 694 of those?
We attempt to call back every one of them.
Okay.
So when you see that abandoned, those are the ones that are dropped for whatever reason.
Thank you.
Chief Matthews, I'm going to start off by telling you I really commend what you and your department has done. I know that there was a with the community support behind you with passing that public safety tax and the actions you're taking is, and based on the statistics, is that was money well spent. That was a, I think we're proving to the community that was a great vote. A couple specific things. On the robberies, the robbery went from 10 to 16. What's the definition of a robbery?
That's somebody with a gun. Give
with
me your
gun.
Stuff.
And so it's a burglary if they don't have a gun?
It's a burglary if it's straight property and nobody's home.
Okay.
If I steal your stuff from you, then it would be a robbery.
If you steal my stuff from me, I'm calling Chief Matthews. Calling 911.
Yeah, there you go, 911.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the vehicle theft. The business alarm permits.
Yes, sir.
And I know there's the false alarm fines. Would you elaborate that on a little bit? The fine... Do you know what the fine structure is?
So I don't have it off the top of my head.
But you get so many free?
You get two or three free, and then after that we track.
Ten
three, and then the fine-based system kicks in. Here's the issue. Right now, all of those alarm permits are entered into our system. We don't have an effective way in the current system to differentiate between active and inactive permits. So best guess right now, we've got a little over 1,000, maybe 1,200 active commercial alarm permits. Each one of those have to be geocoded and entered into our system, and then we have to update that annually with key holders, you know, emergency contacts, all of that stuff has to be inputted in there. So that's part of why I believe it's important that we come back with some kind of fee-based permitting where maybe we charge X number of dollars annually for that commercial alarm permit. Not addressing residential, but I think the commercial, with 822 calls for service last year for commercial alarms, and we track, one of the things our crime analyst does on a quarterly basis or a monthly basis, she tracks our high alarm calls and is giving the patrol commanders a heads up on, you know, Matthews's business over there has two in the last 2 weeks, so that we're going out there proactively and trying to alleviate that problem before we get to the fine-based system.
Okay, I guess I'm just hesitant because adding an alarm permit fee for the businesses is parallel with adding a tax, right? It's an extra fee for businesses. So I'm just wondering if there's ways we could work and accomplish the same thing, but not charging businesses another fee, because sure, there's a lot of fees for businesses.
Sure, I see your concerns, and I was very specific in my wording, cost sharing for the work that we have to put in on the front side to track and monitor that permit system.
Something that I've personally experienced is, maybe something for you to consider also, is if there's something that the businesses could do when there's false alarms that would prevent the cost of the police driving out to the property. At our property, we've gone through several things, and we have high winds, for example, and it dislodges sure, some of ours. So when a business knows for certain, mine, that it is a false alarm, is there anything we can put in place where it's verifiable, where the police don't have to show up?
We receive cancellations all the time when we're en route, and we terminate right then. So that's not a response to us.
Thank you very much for that. Let's see if we can work out something where we can address the fees to the businesses if we can. Something you didn't mention, and I would like you to share with the community a little bit. I've said many times that we're a tourist-driven town, and we're one headline away from having a dramatic decrease in the number sure, of tourists, both for police and fire. I know, would you share with what you've done in your department as far as active shooter training and the interaction that you've had with other local businesses with potential active shooters?
Sure. We offer up those services on a regular basis. We've done it to our faith-based organizations where we've gone out and worked with our local churches and that to provide them educational opportunities on how to address active threats, how to be defensive in the front end. We've also done that with our entertainment venues, our theaters, and things like that. I know that Officer Donathan was out at Sight and Sound just last week, I believe it was, conducting that training with them. So we're available. We make it a part of our regular day to do that, and it's something that's critical to us because of that threat that you're talking about there.
I'll wrap up just by repeating myself and saying I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you very much.
And the public feedback I get is the professionalism of our policemen. I hear that a lot. The politeness and the caring. I hear a lot of great compliments with how our police department interacts with the community. So
thank you. And that culture was started long before Jeff Matthews came to town, and our guys are and girls are very proud of the work that they do, and we're proud of them.
Thank you.
Sure. Dr. Clark.
Thanks for the great report. Sure. Appreciate all that you do. Just a quick question. I see on your top calls for service, mental illness is still low down there numerically in terms of just sheer numbers, but I assume that most of those calls, like for us in medicine, they're pretty time-consuming, pretty labor intensive as well, and you probably have a lot of familiar faces that you see repeatedly. From that perspective, do you see this number of calls increasing over time?
Yes.
Mental illness? And if so, is there anything being done in a collaborative fashion with mental health organizations, for example, Jordan Valley and Burl in this area?
So we have a great relationship, Doctor, with Burl. Burl is in our office weekly, and we share information with them about calls for service, and they often accompany us when we reach back into the community to talk to our high service clients. But nationally, we're seeing an increase, and in your line of profession, you know that as we take away resources from your industry, police officers now become the public health officers in the community. And quite honestly, that's the focus of our training for our crisis intervention. And cops over time have just assumed that responsibility, and now we're trying to backfill the void and give that training. But we're seeing more responses. And you hit on something that's critical for us. We're seeing the same people as we cycle through.
Yeah, if there's anything that we can do, you know, from the medical community side to help, because obviously, you know, your resources are much needed in a different venue.
Sure.
And you know, obviously we can work together and try to achieve better outcomes for these individuals too.
Sure. It's a topic that we stay focused on. We're part of the Southwest Missouri Crisis Intervention Team that meets out of the Greene County Springfield area. We send representatives to each monthly meeting, and we have a voice on that panel. So we're working collaboratively with the community.
Thank you.
Chief, just a couple of questions. One, the vehicle theft has always intrigued me here. As a resident for many, many, many years, I always think it's perfectly safe here. And yet, previous year, we had almost two per week. It's always amazing how many vehicle thefts we have in the city limits. And you have gotten that down by 36% in 1 year. How did you do that? Are we doing something different? Is it just your information campaign getting out there?
So I appreciate the comment, but as a police chief, I'm successful sometimes when I just get out of the way and empower the team to do what they do best. I mentioned that Sergeant Gray is creating that environment of cooperation. He's the one that has linked us with Harrison in the surrounding communities, because last year when we had that 96, we were recovering most of those in Arkansas. So we had the need. He developed the relationships. He meets regularly with that group, and they talk about shared crimes. And we've recovered a lot of cars from the Harrison, Arkansas area. Likewise, we recover theirs.
Yeah. Wonderful. On the as you get your new organization out and you say you're going to try to have officers in the same zone for an extended period of time, would there be some benefit to public meetings? A few years ago, we had neighborhood meetings that we had police and fire attend, and And basically, that was the main joy that the residents took, was in meeting the police and fire and having an opportunity to speak with them about their particular neighborhood. Is there a future there for that, that once we get these officers in place and we can... I would like to see that we're not afraid when we see an officer drive down the street. Instead, we know him and we wave at him.
I'm sure that Lieutenant Barnwell is smiling back there just like I am, because that was a conversation that we had yesterday. How we can partner with C of O or somebody else to come in and help us facilitate those community meetings so that we can understand from the community's perspective what's really important to them.
Thank you.
Mr. Simmons, I think it's probably a gift of a guilty conscience that you're working with.
Well, the last time they stopped me, it was because my license plate was out of date, and it, of course, was because the sticker was laying at my house, and I'd failed to put it on the license plate. They were most understanding about that. But I was most impressed that they spotted me about a block away, the little bitty sticker there, and pulled me over for that. It was very impressive. I would like to add my thank you for this, for the report. Also, for the general overall impression that you and all of your officers have really bring a professional attitude to this for the city of Branson. We don't hear you publicized a lot, and that's a really good thing, because it means whatever you're doing it really well.
There's a great group that works in the police
department. Yes, and we get a few good reports, like Officer Cobra helping to find a child, apparently, in the last day or two. But that's the kind of stuff we hear, and that's the reason is that you're handling everything very professionally, in my opinion. And we certainly appreciate that, and we continue to hope that we make good use of that public safety tax, and I think we're off to a very good start of that. I think everyone appreciates having that. I hope it also leads to the safety of our officers. I know sometimes we've been concerned about having backup for our officers in certain situations, and perhaps if we can get fully staffed, why we will we'll be able to improve that safety of our right. own officers. So. Okay. Thank you very much. Are any other questions from up here? Okay. Okay. Thank you, Chief Matthews. We appreciate it. Okay. The next item on the agenda is the discussion of additional marketing study.
I will start with saying that we brought this to you all at a council meeting, and you asked us to put this item on a study session. The chamber was invited to have their representatives here to communicate regarding marketing. They have some guests with them today, I believe, by looking out in the audience. I will turn it over to Alderman Milton. I keep wanting to call him Larry. I will turn it over to Alderman Milton. He has been one of those that has been asking, and I understand, I will say from me personally, that when Larry brought some of the things to our attention, that I was quite surprised. And I definitely see how we can all learn more about marketing, because we in the city don't really know a lot about it. And that's probably why the wise people before us said, well, you know, we've got this money for marketing. Maybe we should find somebody that really knows how to do the marketing. But I think it's always good as a community to look at what we're doing and see if we can do it better. So I will turn it over to Alderman Milton.
Well, I have no intention of going back and repeating what I've said. I'd like to start off by complimenting Tim Scott at the Black Tie. I was inspired, Tim, by your comments about us all working in unity, basically getting in the rowboat and rowing in the same direction regarding the TCD, CVB, and the city. Very supportive of that, and I think I'd like to work towards that end. We all know that synergy, great things happen when we're all, you know, marching down that same road. I know the Bill 5599 was passed last June or so, 8 months or so ago, and I know the RFPs have been received back in, and at our last Alderman meeting, the question came up of what do we do next? I'd recommend staff maybe comes back to the board with recommendations of maybe a cross-section of the community and review the RFPs. I think it was also, I was reminded at the last meeting that instead of coming up with an arbitrary number, and maybe we can all agree on a not-to-exceed number, but I'd like to see us take action and agree and move that forward, unless there's objections or reasons why we wouldn't want to do that.
Okay. Do we, since this is a study session and we've kind of set a precedent, do we want to let the chamber make any comments they would like to make at this point?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Jeff Seifert, the Branson Chamber of Commerce and CVB. We do have two presentations for you, brief presentations, to give you more scope, kind of what we talked about last time. We have Jerry Henry to go over some metrics with you to inform you about that. And then we also have brought in our agency of record, Miles Media, to give you a little more in-depth on the website and how we're using that website. And this is an effort just to share with you more in-depthly on kind of what we're working towards to better inform you. So if it would be appropriate, we'd like to get them up here and get through their sure. presentations. We'd like to invite Jerry Henry. And I don't know if we have a mobile microphone, but Jerry's more of a mobile microphone mobile person. Don't put him behind a podium.
I would just like to note that I never knew there really was a real Jerry Henry. I thought it was a company.
Test, test.
We'll also submit back. For the record, we do have some district marketing council members in the audience, and I just want to make sure you have that list in front of you. I'll give these to Lisa so she can give those to you. And we'll go back to the right slide.
Yeah. Could you buy where? I don't even know where I'm looking. That's about half. Yeah, it's about halfway into the presentation. Can we go to the first page? You're seeing it in reverse. Do not worry, I will not belabor every slide because your eyes will glaze over. But no, that's
was it the other presentation? I have two PowerPoint. I'm sorry, PDFs here, and you're looking. Market.
It's the right presentation. We're just toward the end.
If he can speak backwards, Jerry, we'll.
Oh, you're getting close. Oh, no, it's actually the other direction.
Let's do this.
Yeah. There you go. Perfect. I think I can do it from here, right?
My apologies. I have no idea how that happened.
Oh, no. I appreciate your help because I get lost with the technology. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for your time. Today, my name is Jerry Henry. I'm the CEO of H2R Market Research, which got my start right here in Branson. The company name H2R is helping to reveal insights that amplify the voice of the visitor. I've been doing this my entire career. I started with Bass Pro Shops up in Springfield, moved to Little Rock, worked for Arkansas, the Axiom, which is an analytics firm, did that for a while, worked for Silver Dollar City, ended up with the Hershen Family Entertainment. And was actually a business unit of Hershen Family Entertainment in 2009, 2010. We've been on our own as a standalone company since the end of 2011 and have thank God, grown pretty tremendously. We now specialize in destinations, attractions, and hospitality research. We have hundreds of clients in those areas, destination states, attractions, and other tourism-related businesses all across North America. Like to say, we serve clients from New England to Southern California and from Alaska, Seattle, down to the Florida Keys and the Caribbean. But most of our work occurs with what's DMOs or destination marketing organizations like Branson. And while I know it probably means nothing to anyone else outside our industry, but I am very proud that we are a winner of the International Travel and Tourism Association's Desmond Slattery Award. And the reason is, in our industry, that's like an Academy Award for sound. So, yay. but I understand it. Okay. Anyway. We have a lot of experience in these types of studies, which is a marketing and media effectiveness study. I've been doing this myself for 25 years. Started with conversion studies. You know, the CVBs get in the inquiries, and so then they go back to those inquiries and determine if they visited and called a conversion study. Problem with that was a pretty narrow look. So then we went to pre-post. We'd do a study and find out what people thought about the brand and whether they'd visit, and then we'd do the ads, and then at the end of the campaign, we'd come in and we'd test to find out, well, how much has changed? Did it really lift our awareness? Did it cause people to come, or did it not? Problem is, using that methodology, that may have been the old telephone methodology, you call people up and say, did you see the ad? They say, oh, yeah, I saw the ad. And they didn't see the ad. So really, it wasn't until the late 2000s that we got into marketing and media effectiveness, which is what we're talking about today. I'm not going to belabor this point, but we are blessed to have a lot of travel and tourism clients, a lot of attractions clients. We work with Coca-Cola. Very proud to say we work with the training camp of the Kansas City Chiefs. That may be my Branson is my favorite, but beyond that, and then we have business partners all over the country. And as it relates to Missouri, I am proud to say that we do 91% of the studies like this in the state of Missouri for the DMOs that are conducting marketing and media effectiveness studies. We do a lot of other research as well, but in the state, we're fairly well known for that. Some key things about this study, though, and the first one is we are looking for incremental growth. Now, Branson was up 1.5% last year. It was a new record. Been up 7.5% over the last 5 years, and that's the largest five-year growth we've seen in a long time. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is of the people who came and of the money they spent, so roughly $2.5 billion that tourists leave in the market, it's of that how much was incremental, how much was above and beyond what we had had as a result of the marketing campaign. I also like to say it's DI-inspired, industry-admired, and MDT-required. What that means is there was an organization called DMAI, it's now called DI, but it's an organization of DMOs and states and professionals that work in that got academics and practitioners together in 2006, 2007 to study this thing about conversion studies and pre-post that had a lot to be desired. And they came back and they had a specific set of protocol that they said you really have to follow if you're going to measure incremental visitation, and that's what we're trying to do. It's industry admired because once that came out, it was adopted by virtually every state and DMO nationwide that attracts this. It's 98% plus that are measuring marketing effectiveness are using a same basic form of these parameters. And it's MDT required, and that is if Branson is going to accept any co-op dollars from the state, and it's a pretty healthy co-op plan, they are required to do this study using this methodology in order to get permission to use those dollars. I won't belabor a lot of point. The CVB exists to drive visitation to grow the entire economy. This study is designed to measure the incremental visitation, spending, and return on investment of the annual campaign to attempt to drive incremental visitation to Branson. Now, Branson measures KPIs all across all the industry standard categories. We track 40 across 10 categories. I'm talking about three of those today. They're the ones in blue over here to the left, marketing effectiveness, marketing efficiency, and post-advertising exposure lift. So there's a lot we could talk about. We're talking about these three. Got to spend a moment on methodology, and I know nobody likes methodology, but it's important to understand that we use a consumer panel to reach travelers nationwide. Actually, what it does is it helps us reach consumers and residents nationwide, and then within our survey, we use a screener to make sure that these people are a household decision maker regarding travel, that they actually traveled for leisure, so on and so forth. We want to make sure that we're talking to qualified travelers nationwide. Those are the ones taking the survey, and then we actually show them the ad. So you don't have any more of the phone and describe it and they tell you they saw it. We actually show the ads and say, have you seen this ad or have you not? We ask some questions about that. We'll get into it. But where we're trying to go is, okay, did the people that see the ads, were they more likely to visit than the people that didn't? Because, well, frankly, if they're not, then we got a problem. So we'll jump into efficiency. At 30,000 feet, 41% of the people in the country had seen the ad, or one of the ads in the campaign. That's a reach of about 36 million, an expenditure of about 5.4 million. That's 15 cents per aware travel household, which is excellent. And we'll talk more about the specifics. First thing we ask before we get in, before we mention any destination, because as soon as you mention the destination, you kind of skewed it. Before we mention any, we ask, have you seen any travel advertisements nationwide? About 60% do. What have you seen? Branson this year ranked third, which is extremely high. However, I will point out that we do this study in tiers, and we'll talk about that, meaning we have 500 that occur from 50 to 300 miles out. We do another 500 surveys from the 300 to 650, and then we'll do 700 surveys beyond 650 plus. As it turns out, that's not necessarily where the population lies. So we are a little skewed by tier toward the center of the United States. Does that make sense? So, but it is done that way every single year. It's never changed. Third place is extremely good. We do these studies all across the country and throughout the Midwest. And I can tell you, as long as you're in the Midwest, Branson is somewhere in the top five almost every time, certainly in the top 10. Nationwide, it's always there too. It just may not be in the loftiest top end. One of the questions we also ask before showing it is something called assisted advertising awareness. That is, we ask about a variety of destinations, as you can see, and are you aware? Do you think you've seen any advertising for us? And as you see, on that question, Branson ranks second only to Myrtle Beach. And that's kind of important because Myrtle Beach has a $36 million annual budget. They got a lot of money in Myrtle Beach. So it's great that Branson's ranging second. Also great that marketing awareness this year, last year, the year before that, the year before, has been, it's higher locally because people know Branson, they see the ads and what have you, higher locally. But even when you get out to 3 to 650 miles and beyond 650 miles, that's pretty darn good at awareness of the campaign. And so overall, we're roughly about, just slightly lower than last year, but right at the same percent. Our historic, well above the historical average. Been doing this for about a decade now. Historic average is 36%, we're running 41. Yay, that's great. Now we're converting it, what is that to market reach? It's one thing to have a percent awareness, but how many traveling households are we talking about here? And obviously, the further you go out, the higher the population gets. You start getting the Los Angeleses and the New York Cities and the Miamis. And so when weighted across a number of households, we find that our reach is actually bigger in the 650 plus at almost 21 million than the other two combined than within 650. That's because it has a pretty high market awareness of the advertising and a massive population. Make sense? So we also look, well, how much did it cost to get that? We know how much we paid. What kind of awareness did we get in return? Because we want to make sure we're not paying too much so that we are efficient in what we're doing. Last year, we spent about 15 cents per aware travel household nationwide. That's exactly what it was last year. And it's slightly better than the historic average at 16. But I'll tell you that anything under 50 cents, under 50 cents, is considered good. We have a variety of clients right here in Springfield, excuse me, right here in Missouri that average between 50 cents and a dollar. So 15 cents is pretty efficient. Not going to go into great deal by medium, but I will point out TV is still king at driving awareness. But look at this. Look at online video. It's topping linear television. That is, people are watching it online, whether it's a YouTube ad or they came to the website, they're watching it online, streaming it somehow, as opposed to just television. So that's all. Oh, you know what? I should also point out, print's still alive when it comes to travel and tourism. It ain't dead yet. May not be as strong as it was before, but it's still still very powerful.
Jerry, could you do me a favor? Could you
yes,
go
sir.
Back one more?
You bet.
The net and the PR. Explain that.
The net PR is we are, and that one you can't ask it, so you have to ask a variety of stories that they may have seen, and the idea is try to determine, was that information that was derived from a news story, or was that drive from an ad? And so it's, and it's the net because it's the combination of those news stories that were out there.
Thank you.
In general, the whole point of this is the more ads you've seen, the more different marketing channels you've seen an ad in, the more likely you are to ultimately visit. That makes sense. I don't think I've ever seen one of those that in general, that wasn't the case. Here's the thing though, efficiency's good, because if you're not efficient, you're wasting money. So we have to measure efficiency, but to be effective, you have to make sure that the people that saw the ads are visiting in much higher numbers than the people that didn't. Essentially that your experimental group, the ones you're wanting to reach, are visiting in higher numbers than the control group, because here's the dirty little secret. Even the people that didn't see your ads come to Branson. Whether I saw your ads or not, the question is how many more of those that saw the ads chose to visit. And that's what we're looking at here. Overall, we generated over 400,000 incremental trips to Branson. These incremental trips spent $12.90. That's a little bit more than the average visitor. You'll see why here in just a moment. That's almost $560 million in incremental spending that wouldn't have been there otherwise at a return on investment of $104. Here's the best news, and that is in every tier, we passed the smell test, if you will. Every tier, the people that saw the ads were more likely to have converted into visitors in 2019 than those that didn't see the ads. So we got an incremental lift in every distance tier. Now remember, that outer market, it's a huge number of aware households. So when you weight that at 1.5, which is almost as good as the core and primary at 50 to 100 miles, it's 1.5 points, but it represents 312,000 of the trips. And that's the deal. Of this last year, 72% of the incremental trips came from beyond 650 miles. It's not unusual. Last year it was 62%, but it is one of the larger ones that we've seen in recent years. So the ads were really driving trips from beyond 300 miles to a great extent.
Jerry, question.
Yes, sir.
Some of that is because we've had, when we passed the tourism district tax years ago, we've been very, very aggressive within the community between the city of Branson's money and the tourism district's money. There's been a large set of ads for a very lengthy period of time.
Yes.
Surely that has some advantage.
It absolutely does. Now, this was measuring specifically the ads that they saw this year, and this was a new campaign this year. But having said that, the fact that you're familiar with Branson, you've seen ads in the past, it probably does make you more likely to go, yeah, that's a Branson ad and I saw that ad. And we know that because when we do new ads or new campaigns start, you frequently see it drop down. You frequently see the quality of what they're thinking about the ads drop down just a little bit because it takes a while to get familiar. And let's face it, human beings like things that are familiar to them, that they've seen before. It's a little bit more warm and fuzzy. So does it play a role? Yes. But did we show any of the old ads? No. These were all 2019 ads that we showed in order for them to say, yes, I saw it, and therefore I'm an aware travel household. They are there only by having looked at the 19 ads and said I saw it. At 30,000 feet, it generates over 400,000 trips. Extrapolated across the spending, we get nearly $560 million in incremental revenue. The fact that we invested $5.4 million in paid and PR gives us a return on investment of $104. Most of that money, again, because that's where most of the trips came from, is coming this last year from beyond 650 miles. And again, that was true last year and it was true the year before, but that's where a lot of the growth was in 19. And in terms of return on investment, as you can see back in 18, the 50 to 300, was a 72, had dropped to 41 in 19, and the historical average is still about 40. So recently we've actually been doing better, but typically, and actually I'll draw your attention to the Branson historic average, because that's representing like a decade's worth of data. It historically does deliver a better return on investment the further you get. Why? Because when somebody that lives, you know, 800 miles away sees an ad, it has a bigger impact. They're not already coming. You know, somebody sees an ad 125 miles away, there's a pretty good chance they may already be coming to Branson this summer. So So the ads are doing dollar for dollar a little bit greater impact the further you get from Branson. Ends up being about 1.1 million room nights. That's about a little over a quarter of all the room nights that we record in the area that are incremental. Here's the great thing about this type of study. So we now have them. We're already talking to them. We have to show them the ads in the campaign to determine, did you visit or not? Why not take the opportunity to find out what they think about the ads? So now we're moving from somewhat subconscious, because it's really models that are putting it together, and now what you're about to see are the direct, what do I think of your ads? Now, most of the decision-making that goes on in Branson is pretty research-based. So this stuff starts to come into play quite a bit. So what do you think? How appealing, how enjoyable are these ads? About the same as last year. And really, not a lot of difference if you look at it by market tier. Runs about 67%. Now, the historic average is 71. Yeah, it's still pretty darn close, but a little lower than the historic average, but still very, very good. In addition to are they appealing, does the ad make Branson seem more appealing? Because let's face it, you could look at an ad and laugh, or you could look at an ad and say, that ad's great, but does it really do the job of making you want to visit or it make you think better about the destination? So in this case, it's a little higher percentage than what they think about the ad. That is, it does a little bit better for Branson and Branson's appeal. Differentiation. We got a lot of competition in Branson. Everybody's wanting to take our visitors away. Everybody. Every other destination wants our visitors. So our ads don't have to just be appealing. They don't just have to make Branson more appealing. They need to be differentiated in some way to cut through the clutter. 58% said they were above the historical average and above last year. So new campaign, which I think probably causes the appeal and what have you to be down just a little bit, but clearly just a tad bit more differentiated. And again, you're not seeing massive differences. These are just travelers, what they think of the ads. So what do the ads do? What are your takeaways? What do you feel from these? Number one thing is, well, they do a pretty good job of capturing the Branson experience. They provide new information I hadn't previously seen. They provide information on a lot of different show experiences available in Branson. They share information I believe is credible about Branson and so on and so forth. Frankly, though, even if you go to the bottom of that list, it's still over half that are agreeing with his statements, that the ads are memorable, the ads are the kind that they would talk about with friends. And frankly, you know, talking about it with friends in social and getting word of mouth is obviously far more important than it was when we were kids. What actions are you likely to take? Well, the action they're almost always likely to take. I'll go online to learn more. I'm going to go find out. I'm going to go to brand.com. I'm going to go search these out. Or I'm going to go to the official Branson website, explorebranson.com, see what they have to tell me. Or I'm going to read travel reviews, because I don't know that I trust everybody, so I'm going to check it out. Oh, yep, that's pretty good too. Although that one did drop as an action this year. Visit friends about Branson and sign up for the website. This one may be my favorite, though, because up to this point, we were looking back in what happened. Did you see the ads? What did you think about the ads? Did you visit because of the ads? This one now, that was all looking in the rearview mirror. This one's looking out the front windshield. And it's saying, okay, early in the survey, long before we reveal that this is about Branson, we ask how likely are you to visit Branson and about five other destinations. A little bit of a smokescreen. Now, after we've shown him the ads, it's pretty clear that it's about Branson. The question is, what's their intent now? We expect, after we've just shown you the ads, we expect it to go up. The question is, how much does it go up? Industry norm is about 7 points. We expect intent to go up 7 points after they see the ad. Branson's went up 11. Last year it was 12. It's about the same. So here's the good news. The ads are lifting intent more than we would expect. So out the front windshield looks pretty good too. I may fly through this because you know a lot about the Branson traveler profile, and I know you got a lot on your plates, but I may hit some of these. Like, this is one of the first times we'd asked this question. That is, what decision comes first? Is it the decision to go to Branson, or is it some activity that you want to go, a specific show that you want to visit, or a specific mall that you want to take your family to, or what have you. Which one is it? Interestingly, in Branson's case, at all distances, it's they want to come to Branson. They decide to come to Branson, and then they decide what activities they're going to do there. And it's running about two-thirds to a third in every distance category, which I found interesting. We never asked that before, didn't know. Also, market potential, which is simply the sum of, have you recently visited Branson? Have you ever visited in the past? Have you considered Branson, but just haven't pulled the trigger yet? The sum of those three for the definition of the slides. Market potential, 43% fall into that category. 43% of the travelers in the United States are potential for Branson, and that's up 3 points over the 40% in 18, and about the same as the historical average at 44. And as you would expect, the people that live closer, a little bit higher ratio that they fall within the market potential. The further you get, yeah, your market potential goes down, which I think is probably why the ads tend to have a greater lift for them, because they ain't already coming. We got to convince them. Competitive sets potential, really, other than Myrtle Beach, most of those are all about the same. So we don't have a great ranking, but it's at the same token, it's about the same. And actually, most of these in conversion rate, which we're measuring, same thing for retention rate. It dropped a little bit, but it's still good. It hasn't changed dramatically in a long time. We still have a lot of upside, but we know that. If you've got 43% market potential nationwide, there's still a lot of upside, and that's what VGI measures. So rather than spend a lot of, this one, though, makes sense to me, and that is, what's your opinion of the Branson brand? And over half is very positive, down a little bit from the 57%, but I think that's also probably a new campaign. Historic average is 56, so we've stayed in that basic range between 50 and 60% for a decade. Interestingly, a little higher if you stay within the region. As soon as you get beyond 300 miles, it stays about the same. So while we look at it as in three tiers, there's kind of this core and primary market within 300 miles that know the area, and then you get beyond 300 miles, and it's kind of everyone else, as you can see with that. And we're right there in the middle. We're right there between Gatlinburg and Wisconsin Dells. But notice we're ahead of our two largest competitors in the state of Missouri, St. Louis and Kansas City. And by the way, the tiered approach to the sampling affects them the same as Branson, so that's a pretty apples-to-apples comparison. A net promoter score is a simple, how likely are you to recommend Branson? So this is only asked of those who have visited Branson. So you've been there, how likely are you to recommend Branson? We track this every day in our intercept survey, but those are people that have been here in the last 10 days when we send them that survey. This survey is people who have been here in the last year. So now it's not the experiencing self we're measuring the remembering self. And it's the remembering self that determines if they're going to come back. A net promoter score is asked on a 10-point scale. If you say 9 and 10, you're a promoter. But if your intent is 0 through 6, you are a brand detractor. You're not going to recommend us. And the reason it's called net is we take the sum of the 9s and 10s, we subtract out the 0s and 6s. This is not an H2R thing, although I wish it were. We'd be very even more successful if we had it. But you search it, you're going to find it. Pretty much every industry has a net promoter score. Branson's is very high at 48%. Kansas City, St. Louis runs about half that. Myrtle Beach, though, 52. Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg, interestingly, individually, they're both at 57. The Dells at 49. Top brand attributes, and these are basically phrases that say, overall, which of these do you believe describes Branson? The top brand attributes that these people nationwide said is, well, Branson offers live music and entertainment. It's a family-friendly destination. It's safe and it's wholesome. It has a variety of things to do for the entire family. Allows us to do things we can't do on a regular basis, and so on and so forth. But those tend to be the same top five and have been for a very long time. And the traveler profile, I think you've probably seen a bunch of times. Summary I am going to hit in that we did have a few more traveler households nationwide, went up a couple of points in terms of people traveling this year. Our aided awareness stayed about the same, well above the historical average. Reach was well above our average. And our trips, our travel income, and our return on investment were all very strong and positive. Good efficiency. Effectiveness is more important to me, but you want to be effective and you want to do it in an efficient way. And so it's important to balance both out. The good news is Branson this year has certainly done both. It's generated the incremental impact in a range that we typically see. Honestly, over the last bunch of years, it tends to be around 400, 450. Occasionally, you get up to 500,000 trips. I do believe the 559 million is a record incremental, and it's driven because 72% of those incremental trips were coming from a long way away. And people that come from 800 or 900 miles away tend to stay here a lot longer when they come. And because they stay longer, they've got more hotel stays, more nights, they do more things, they spend a lot more money. So the further you can get somebody to travel, the more money that, whereas those within 300 miles, they don't spend as much per transaction, per trip, but they come back more often. The advertising evaluation was all good straight across the board. They liked the campaign, the right messages seemed to be getting through, and we have plenty of upside that remains. The reality is we could probably more than quadruple our budget and still be maintaining a pretty good return on investment in what we're doing, because we're still being outspent by a lot of folks. But bottom line, I started out telling you that we were going to talk about effectiveness, efficiency, and the post-ad exposure lift, and all three of those in 2019 were all three very positive. Questions?
Good Lord, plenty. We've come a long way, bud, when we first started this thing.
Yes, sir. It's been a journey.
The numbers that we include, does that include the district, what I'm going to call and hold, between the meets and bounds of what we set up with the tourism district? It's within the confines.
Okay. Yes. It is what I would call, for simplicity, it is the greater Branson area that we're talking about this.
Any parallels that you see in here to your research that's done with Silver Dollar City as far as 75 to 100 miles, 100 miles to 300 and 300 and on out?
Not necessarily Silver Dollar City, but nationwide, I can tell you there are a lot of parallels. This is not unusual. There's what I will call a variety of universal consumer truths. That is, the closer you get to a destination, the more likely you are to be getting families. The further you travel, the more likely you are to see the party size go down. True of every destination I've ever looked at. And if you've ever traveled with an 8-year-old in a car more than 650 miles, you probably know why. It's not that much fun. But yeah, in general, the ability to pull in diminishes as you go out. They get harder and harder to pull in people from a long way away. The difference between, say, a Silver Dollar City and a Branson in general is Silver Dollar City, we get the majority of its business from within 650, as does Branson, but Branson will do a larger percentage beyond. So Branson does a larger percentage of those people that are staying the 6 and 7 nights, they're staying in timeshares and spending large money over many, many days.
What have your research addressed with the issue of the entertainment culture in America and what that's how that's changed as such? Do you have any feelings on that?
Oh, how long do you have? probably the simplest answer, it has fragmented in many, many, many different ways. That the interest, it's you no longer get what 150 million people or 100 million watch the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl may be the last big thing that people watch, especially if Kansas City's in it. But there's not too many other entertainment things that are getting bigger. It's fracturing out, and people are finding really small, specific interest. And because of the nature of the internet, if I'm a bluegrass fan, and I will follow bluegrass all over the country, and if there's something going on in Seattle and I want to do it, I found out about it, and now I'll go do it. And there's 200 people at that festival. So fracturing is probably the biggest. The other one is fresh new content. And that we're seeing that across the entertainment sector. If you're talking about out-of-home entertainment, fresh and new is the new free. And it's because we've had a long sprint, almost a decade of economic expansion, so people aren't worried about their jobs. They're free to travel They're not worried about losing the job, so they're fairly confident that they've got money. So the whole staycations that we saw between 2010 and 2013, they're gone. And so they're wanting to go to new places and see new things, and we love that. And even though in 19, our nationwide study, not this one, said, oh boy, looks like we're about to see some circling of the wagons and a regional rebound, which, by the way, should help Branson. Even though they're doing that, that desire for fresh new hasn't waned, not a little. That even if they plan to stay closer and not go as far, they still want fresh, new content. So if you're running the same thing over and over and over, they get bored easier than they did, say, 5, 10 years.
I've been looking at the data for a long time since we formed the district and looking at the numbers, but one of the few agreements that my compadre then left to me and that I've had is the issue of the impact on theaters, which concerns us. And I can look at the numbers, and it does concern me. And these are friends that are in my business. As you look over time, you see an improvement. The last couple of years, that has taken a back seat to improvement. And what any thoughts about that? Because I look at ad effectiveness, and I see our taxes. I see the tourism district tax is up, $400,000+ at the end of the year. And then I look at the theaters, and none of it seems to make sense. When I take everything into account, and then I look at that, and I see that huge drop, you got to ask the question, what in the hell happened?
I think, man, I'm not going to try to pretend to be an expert on that, because I haven't studied this per se, but as you might have guessed, I have an opinion. And that is, if you look across all the shows, some are doing pretty darn well for themselves. Others are not. The ones that are doing pretty darn well for themselves, I would recommend that you look and study what they're doing. And typically, they either have a lot of advertising budget that they will deploy both in Branson and outside of Branson to try to get new visitors, and or they're introducing new scenes or new shows or some new aspect, so they're tapping into that desire for fresh new content. Now, if you turn around and you look at the ones that they're not doing as well, frequently it's they've tweaked something, but it's sometimes it's the same old. Now, there's exceptions to that rule. There's some big theaters that have done everything in the world and are not doing great, and there's some little guys that have been changing up stuff all the time and not. But at 30,000 feet, I think those that have been evolving and are advertising in outer markets and keep the product fresh tend to be doing better than those that don't.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Larry's writing, so I guarantee he's got something.
You're obviously the guru. I moved here 27 years ago, and in the early days, I was just overly impressed with your level of knowledge.
Thank you, sir.
And have been ever since. Congratulations on whatever the heck that award was.
Thank you.
Are we going to get a presentation also from Miles? I think what I'd like to do is, if you don't mind, I'd like to save some of my questions and comments until after we hear from Miles.
I would like to follow up on you, though. I'd like to follow up on one of your comments there. Is there such a thing as old becoming fresh? And I ask that for a reason. And I don't mean to plug anyone, but the Chambers Black Tie Banquet had the Peterson family. Just pure, wonderful music. You used to see that all the time. You don't see it much anymore on any venue. I don't know why I hadn't seen their show, but I was very impressed by that. To me, although that's old, it was new and fresh, very enjoyable.
There's a reason there's a saying that history repeats itself. And what happens is you tend to get far enough out that for the younger people, it's not a repeat. It's new to them. And just like it was entertaining to us way back in when, and we may have gotten tired of it, it may seem old to us, but to this new generation, it doesn't seem old at all, which is good entertainment again. And usually there's some little tweak to it that they'll mash it up somehow. But no, I absolutely believe that what is old becomes new again, usually with some slight tweak. But yeah, trends repeat themselves. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. I did note that Dr. Kontz had to leave, right? Okay.
I always dread going after Jerry. He is quite the presenter. I should have, you know, lobbied a little bit harder to go before him and let him finish and close. I clicked the clicker when you guys were opening it. Apologies. All right, so I'm going to try to keep this quick and give you an overview of who we are as Miles. Thank you for having us here, by the way, today. Who we are as a company, what we do for Branson, and try to answer any questions. Right? So who am I? I'm Gray Lowry, Vice President of Strategy and Insights with Miles, also co-owner of the company. Been working at Miles for 9 years, travel industry for about 11 now. Started as a full-stack LAMP developer. What that means is Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. Primarily what websites are built on if they're not built on a Microsoft .NET platform. So primarily Drupal and WordPress. From there, I've kind of evolved my career into overseeing all of our MarTech or marketing technology that we use across our clients, and ultimately oversee about $50 million of marketing, media marketing investment across our destination and destination resort clients. The title basically just means I know a lot of things about a lot of different things that we do. So while I may be focused in the analytics and tech space, work in the creative area as well, business development, can kind of answer things in generalities as it comes up. So who are we at Miles? We are an agency or a marketing consultancy, as we prefer to say, inspired by travel. What that means is that we don't have someone working on a brand like Nutella in the morning and then switching over to Branson in the afternoon. All we do is focus on travel. We are vertical specific, specifically with DMOs and then destination resorts. We have about 100 plus travel brand clients. To service those clients, this slide says 275. I think our headcount's at like 289 right now. Headquartered in Sarasota, Florida, in Denver, Colorado, with satellite offices around the country and really around the world. We have a fairly large presence in Auckland, New Zealand as well. As a company size perspective, we do about $100 million in gross billings. The way we keep score, it's closer to about 70 in net, and then about 15 in EBITDA. And we have really long client relationships. Unlike most agencies where we may win a bid or a contract, we come in, we try to get as much as we can in a short amount of time and then scale back the amount of work we do. We're in it for the long haul. We are in it for a long relationship. And when we look at our relationships across our clients, including new clients, we average an 8-year standard client relationship. And so in our agency space, that is an unheard of statistic. Normally you're at somewhere between 2 and 3 years, really. So we pride ourselves on how long we are sticking with our clients and the relationships we build with them and the growth that we have together. Looking at those clients, so a sample or swath of that 100 plus, and it's the largest, we work with Brand USA, the entity that markets the United States internationally, annual operating budget of around $200 million. We do print production for them, website work, digital media buying, as well as I work a lot on their analytics and their OTT or over-the-top television platforms. From there, we work with organizations like Bermuda, Miami, Puerto Rico, Memphis, Delaware North, who is focused on the hospitality business and running hotels. Macy's, from a non-endemic travel perspective, we help them bring international travelers to their flagship stores to purchase products through their visitor program. And then Jerry mentioned Destinations International. So we sit on the board of Destinations International, the association that manages DMOs, and we actually designed their new logo and the rebranding from DMAI to DI. So a very big commitment to this industry of destination marketing. From a service set perspective, strategic consulting, branding, creative services, advertising services and media buying, revenue generation, digital development, content creation, distribution, really we can provide services across the board. And when you look at that client slide, if you ask one of them what we do, it's all a little bit different because we are a broad scale company that likes to provide the services that our clients need. We don't keep score with awards, but it's always nice to get them. And so for us over the past 3 years, we've got approximately 155 awards across those categories. Most notably with our web services work here, we have been ranked a outstanding web developer by the Web Marketing Association 5 years in a row. And with Skift's 25 best tourism websites in the world, two of our sites are on that list with Go to Bermuda and Discover the Palm Beaches. So very proud of our work with those. Not only are we a company that is focused on this space, we build relationships with a lot of other companies that are focused on this space and are really platform partners, if you will. Adara, from a measurement and media perspective, they basically have data relationships with all of the major flagged hotels and most of the major airlines. We then take that data and help us prioritize buying media based on those data models, as well as measure based on how many people actually booked a room with their data partners or booked a flight with their data partners. Arrivalist is who we use in this market, and they're focused less on a data partnership with a flag partner, but more on whether or not someone was exposed to an ad and then arrived after seeing that ad. So it's really the ability to optimize in real time, is our advertising working? The problem with it, and where Jerry comes into play and why it's so important to us, is we don't know whether or not they saw the ad, they were actually influenced to go. We can draw correlations, but without asking the question on whether or not that ad influenced their decision, we're just drawing correlations. But I'll show you a little bit about what we're doing with them. Uber Media, who we're starting to work with more, this is all about geolocation and looking at how phones move throughout different areas and being able to plot that. Work very closely with Google in multiple programs, whether it be buying advertising from them, or we actually work to optimize a destination's presence on Google using in a program that we call the Google DMO program. We work directly with Google Maps to make sure that the reviews and listings in the destination are of the best quality. When we started doing this, sometimes you would go to a convention center in a certain city, there would be no pictures of the convention center, and you might get a random picture of a peacock, because that's what machine learning does. So optimizing, or a picture of St. Pete Beach at night doesn't really sell the destination when all you have is a couple white lights, right? So optimizing that, because you're seeing hundreds of millions of impressions across those channels. TripAdvisor, Facebook, Expedia, Sojourn is like an Adara. And then one of our partners that we're working with a lot more right now is VisaView Travel. So actually looking at whether or not someone saw an ad and then did they make a purchase in that market. With Visa being the largest carrier or largest card merchant service, they're able to look at huge scale on whether or not someone saw that ad, came into the market, what amount of money they spent, in what category, and where their primary common evening location is. We're doing a lot more of that to try to understand that economic impact piece from a direct measurement perspective and then correlate that to what Jerry's doing from a research perspective. We're also big in the research game. We don't do our own research. We work with companies like Jerry's and others to produce research on behalf of our clients, but we do invest in destination research as a whole. One of the things that I took from what you put out there is the fact that people make the decision choice to come on the entire destination, on the experience, right? So one of the things we're finding more and more as we understand how people are making those travel decisions, it's coming from that underlying need as to what problem they are trying to solve by going on vacation. Is it to disconnect, maybe go somewhere remote? Is it about to have a wild and crazy experience? Is it going back to wholesome family fun? What is the underlying need that they're trying to solve? And then produce advertising and creative around that idea. There's a famous quote, and I can't remember the name of the man, but he was a marketing professor at Harvard, and it was that no one wants to buy a quarter-inch drill bit. What they're looking for is a quarter-inch hole. So if you tell them all the way your drill bit is the best drill bit, they don't really care. They care about does it produce the best hole for the best price, right? And so we want to solve that underlying need rather than tell them a huge laundry list of everything that we have to do. We want to sell them the entire experience so that they can solve that underlying need that they want by spending this money with their family to go on vacation. So in closing about us, we understand travel for very future focused, and we iterate and evolve. So with that, a very quick highlight of what we've done with Branson, because we have been working together since 2013. We came on board strictly to move a website, not actually redesign it, but to change the content management system from what was being used to Drupal 7. We did that in 2014. From there, we ended up working with you on organic optimization, personalizing the website as to how someone browsed in the past, where they're coming from, using third-party data to understand what they look like, what they may be interested in, content production, social distribution. We then made the website look better and started maintaining it. 2016, we took over paid search, content strategy, email marketing. We pulled in user testing of that, and then we started really updating the analytics that we were providing. You guys were actually the first destination that we launched a reporting platform for called SweetSpot, which was an aggregate of all of the different types of reports that you would get as a marketing organization, whether it be your website analytics, your paid search, your paid social, your display advertising, your out-of-home, and everything, and we've since evolved that. 2017, took over the management of digital media, display media, online video, connected television. Did video strategy, 2018, Google DMO program, the one I was talking about as to how we are not just optimizing our on-site presence, but how the brand is represented in the platforms themselves that are seeing so much traffic. Because what's happening, specifically with Google, is they are not referring as much traffic back to a website. They're keeping it within their organization, within their site structure, so that they can continue to monetize that user, right? So instead of providing a list of things that may solve your query, they're providing their own knowledge graph or quick answers to help solve that, right? And so as they siphon traffic away from a traditional website into their own platforms, how do we make Branson look better than the other potential destinations in those carousels for when you're looking for a place to go on vacation? How do we get you to convert from their organization of information into the specific website and ultimately as a visitor? 2019, we brought in Arrivalist. I'll talk about that. Did some more organic, and then we implemented the new campaign. The highlight of some of the old websites when we started, this was an initial update, and now this is where we are here. So a little bit of a progression over the years. Analytics work, 2016, this is the first platform we launched. We're currently rolling out a new platform on Google Data Studio that's going to be more interactive and have variable date ranges. The traditional platform, it was here's your month, here's your month, here's your month, here's your quarter, here's your year. Now, all variable date ranges, so if you want to look at a specific week, year over year, or month over month, we have the flexibility to do that. We're also ingesting many more data sources, storing them in a data lake called Google BigQuery, and providing, it's a petabyte scale data warehouse where we can actually query things in real time. And one of the highlights of this is Tourism New Zealand just did a really interesting study. They looked at people that saw their ads in Australia, and then they served them a Tourism New Zealand ad, and then they served them an ad that had no New Zealand message, just like a PSA, right? Then they targeted people in New Zealand that were looking at Australian news sources. And by using BigQuery and looking at the log files from our ad servers, which we do as well, they were actually able to see of the people they targeted in Australia with the Tourism New Zealand message and the message that's the PSA, how many people are actually in New Zealand looking at Australian news sources and come up with an influence rate, if you will. And so we're looking at doing some of that as we upgrade the data infrastructure around the organization. Arrivalist discussed a little bit. They're basically a panel of 120 million users, and what that allows us to do is was a user exposed to an ad, and then did they come to the destination? What are our daily arrivals? What places in the market are they going to? What POIs? And then what are the APM, or arrivals per thousand metric, of our media? So give you an example, again, control group, active users. You look at the response, non-arrivals, arrivals, and then we have a dashboard to look at what media and what channels are the most effective. So here you can see the website as a run of site, specific sections, what is the most efficient at getting someone to the destination. Same thing with all of our marketing sources. How did Sojourn compare to Adara? How did Garden and Gun compare to Nativo? What is the most efficient for us? Again, combination of efficiency and effectiveness. But this helps us prioritize. Again, not a full picture, because we don't have the correlation as to did the ad cause them to come, why Jerry is so important. But it does allow us to make optimizations in a much quicker way because we can use those signals. And usually, not always, they do correlate to most of the stuff we see in research. So what's next? What are we working on this year? So Jerry mentioned online video, huge. Fragmentation, as far as linear TV goes, we are having a much bigger shift in what we call connected TV or OTT, or MVPD, multi-video platform something. There's a million different acronyms in this space, right? But essentially, people are not watching the same primetime show like they were in the past. They're all watching something that they care about, something that is for them. Maybe it's a micro-influencer on YouTube that does Silver Dollar City or Disney reviews, right? Like, that's all they're watching. They're not watching primetime on NBC or on Fox anymore. They're only watching YouTube, and the new stars are those YouTube creators. They're also watching TV in a nonlinear format, so on demand using YouTube, Hulu. So we are moving our ads outside of just that traditional TV space, as well as even traditional digital banners, because we can say a lot more in a 30-second spot or a 15-second spot and be just as targeted and still tie back the measurement to it. So using platforms like Adara, where we can pull in a specific audience, we can target a specific audience of people that maybe went to Pigeon Forge in the past with a Branson ad, and then we can see whether or not people in those households actually came to Branson. Again, there are always issues with what is the overall scale, so we can't use it as a pure measure of effectiveness, but it does give us a lot of information on this. We're moving from Drupal 7, which we started in, to Drupal 8. This may not sound like a big deal, but it is a major CMS platform upgrade and something that we really need to do. As open source CMSs move, what happens is the support for security patches starts to subside and sunset in the older platform, so we need to move up. Because the last thing you want to see is some sort of JavaScript injection on a site offering some sort of mail enhancement pills, if you will, on our website, right? Like, it happens. So we want to stay current with code bases. And then finally, as we see a switch away from cookie-based audiences, which have been all of the rage for the last 5 to 10 years in advertising, we are seeing a surge in contextual audiences again, and contextual AI, which is automated intelligence, which is the big brother of machine learning. So less about looking at a cookie across multiple websites, because Safari's basically killed that for 50% of phones in North America. It's continuing to do so. Google's committed in the next year and a half basically to kill third-party cookies, which is how we build audiences right now, right? So what we're looking at is how someone consumes content when they're logged into a news publisher or on our website, looking at where they scroll to on the page, how long they're staying at a particular piece, what they're clicking on, and building models around that, as opposed to how they're interacting with multiple websites, because that's being taken away from us. We're doing that in the ads we're buying. We're also using machine learning on Explore Branson to understand not just what a piece of content is tagged as in the CMS, but what is, using natural language processing, the keywords that are coming up the most, the classifications, what are the actions being taken, same thing that Meredith is doing with all their content right now, so that we can understand what is this content and how is it relating to someone that we may not see, even if we're just tagging it as golf, right? There are much more finite ways of looking at that, which computers and honestly like $30 a day in a cloud computing system like Amazon or Google allow us to train a model to do that much more effectively than the 5 humans it would take a month to do it in the past. So we're able to take advantage of that. So I'm out of breath. That was a lot. Hopefully I followed up Jerry, like, you know, in some good fashion, because he is a lot to go after. But I hope that gave you some insight as to how we're working together and kind of how excited we are to be in this market and continuing to innovate with you all. And hopefully there's some questions.
Thank you.
The only comment I'd have is next time you want to go first.
He's good. I mean,
he is good.
We've had what, 3-5 presentations together, and whenever I go first, I feel much better about myself than when I go after him. I'm nervous.
Do you have any questions up here? We're about to run out of time. We're about 10 more minutes. But...
we have 10 more minutes for
The meeting.
Oh,
we're 12:30 to 2:30.
Okay.
Bring in dinner and ribs.
But if we have no more questions.
Well, I truly appreciate the professionalism from Jerry, and it was Gary.
Gray, like the color.
Gray?
Yeah. Trust me, if I had a dollar for every time I got Gary, I wouldn't need this job anymore.
We won't charge you.
It is gray. There's nobody in the right mind could question the detail and amount of information and professionalism that you provide. There's nobody on the planet that will question Jerry's expertise and what he provides. I'm not sure that what this presentation was, and I truly appreciate it. I enjoy the annuals every year, but I don't know that that's what we were looking for with the RFP. For example, and I've got dozen questions for Gary, but it wouldn't be fair because I'd be tying up everybody's time for personal questions.
Let me just see if I can cut to the chase. Jerry, would you go to the podium? Let me ask you just a few questions. Approximately 5 years ago, and it might have been Gray, when you changed the website. My recall is that years ago, 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago, our website was predominantly promoting theaters and shows in Branson. Predominant. And then, from what I'm gathering from the community and my own personal belief, is there was a day when changes were made at a CVB level of what we're going to shift from marketing, and a website that went from predominantly, and probably over predominantly on shows, the pendulum swung so far to the point where the words shows or live entertainment wasn't even on the home page of the website. The word wasn't even mentioned. So it went from a dramatic way too much to almost invisible. There was a report, and I think it's what you and I talked about at the CVB board meeting, and I thought it was a report that you generated, but it was talking about if you're going to change your messaging, it didn't say these words, but the gist was, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, make it a gradual shift. And so many in the community, including myself, felt like it was a dramatic shift. Without the words being said that we're not going to promote the theater industry as much, we're going to now promote camping and hiking and soft adventure and other things. Do you recall a dramatic shift in the website, the CVB's messaging?
I'm not a marketing guy, so I don't pay as much I don't own a tourism business in Branson, so I probably don't pay as much attention as you do to exactly what's on there and what have you. But I think it's a fair thing to say that it has definitely changed significantly over that time frame, and it's certainly no longer as much about shows as it once did. What I don't recall, but I wouldn't challenge you, is that there became a pivot that it changed. I don't know about that. We're really not charged with measuring the different segments of the entertainment that comes to Branson. We certainly look at a variety of them, but we do tend to be charged with measuring overall what's happening. So, yeah, I think what you're ultimately saying is, should there be more awareness, more presence of the shows out there than there has been? And the answer is, I don't know. I think that's up to the consumer for them to tell us. So without a study, I don't know that I could say. But having said that, between 2015 and 2019, Branson's visitation has grown 7.5%. And between 10 and 14, another 5 years, it grew 0.6%. A lot of that was a recession. But even if you go back 20 years, you have to go back to the 90s to find a five-year period that it had grown 7.5%. So I don't think that the shift caused Branson to collapse by any means, because it's growing faster than it has. I think the question becomes, okay, at the 7.5%, had you pursued somewhat different tactics or what have you, could it be 9.5%? And I don't know, one of the things that we had talked about before is there's not a control group that would allow us to measure this over that, so I couldn't say for sure. But certainly what has occurred by pretty much any measurement, whether we look at sales tax or room demand, or I'd sure like to get water usage if you could find a way to do that for us too. But I think all metrics would indicate that overall we have grown. The question now becomes, okay, what segments should we put together to ensure we are growing as fast or as optimally as we possibly can. And that's kind of a different question that we haven't looked at in a very long time.
Yeah. Because I know there's an area where Jeff and I just, we don't agree. Because in my opinion and others, there was a significant shift, and Jeff doesn't think that there was. So when we're looking at this study, what I'm looking at, and what I think is healthy for us to look at, are things like, and it's not anything you guys address because it's not, you haven't been asked to, I guess, but the when we look at our tourism tax, the amount, $13 million roughly of tourism tax, that is equivalent to about $325 million of economic impact. The theater industry brought in 2 point something million, which was about a $72 million impact. I'm not sure how many years ago, but I believe that $2 million economic impact used to be, if I'm not mistaken, I think it used to be $4 million. Which would have been $150 million of economic impact. So we may be bringing in more people. I don't question that. So the number of people that come in, their spend comes in, their length of stay. But our tourism tax, specifically the revenues we receive from theaters, is dramatically down. Dramatically. So the question is, why is that? It could be affected by FIT companies. It could be affected by a lot of things, which is something that I'm thinking that this study would help us answer. I don't have enough time for all my questions to you. In one of your
I think you need to go to the consumer and ask the consumer, those that show any interest in coming to Branson, and do some sort of concept test that would be shows versus lakes versus shopping. There would be different concepts where you measure appeal and intent and desire to visit that mention Branson, but it's talking about a new which of these genres and compare them head to head.
And I agree with that. I don't mean to keep focusing on the shows. It's just the shows have such a significant impact on our tax base.
Without question.
A lot of people can say shows are dying, people are dying, buses are breaking down, whatever the reasons why people don't attend shows anymore. People don't attend shows anymore. Yet, last year, which was a real down year, there was still $72 million spent on theater seats. Well, $72 million isn't as much as it used to be, but I think that's still a respectable number. Right?
Absolutely.
So it's not like nobody's going. I know there's a show study being done. I don't believe, I don't know this to be true because, quite frankly, we don't get any information, but I don't think that that show study is addressing any marketing. Is that fair? We need to make this short because they're going to run me out of time.
So, yes, no, sir. That's not entirely true. So,
okay,
there's
so, so they are addressing marketing.
It is included in
okay.
their scope. That's not the focus, though, of their project.
Okay. Jerry, you mentioned, and I've seen it time after time after time in your reports, about that, the ROI, right? The $900-and-something ROI. Extremely impressive, right? I mean, those numbers just incredible. I think a fair question, which I'd like to have done in this study, is out of the total budget, $11, $12 million, yes, no, close, Jeff, is your budget around $11 or $12 million total to the CVB?
Yeah, city and ours together, yeah.
I don't know why I'm having to pull teeth. But at $11 or $12 million, that's available. The ROIs that you calculate, which are crazy impressive, I believe you provided a funnel of here's all the things we've done with the marketing dollars. It goes into the funnel, which generates this ROI. I think a fair question is $5 million, give or take, goes into the funnel that produces this tremendous ROI. Well, out of $11-12 million, not if, but since that funnel is so productive, is it a fair question that would it be prudent to see about how we could put more money in this funnel that's generating this ridiculously high ROI? Is that a fair question?
Absolutely. With an ROI of that high, I'd be looking to beg, borrow, or steal.
Thank you
very much.
To
put more money in the funnel.
So I think that's a fair question that I'd like to get answered.
Not really steal, Chief.
Boy, there's so many. First-time visitors. Many, many years ago, when we used to have a marketing advisory council, you made a presentation, and I believe the screen had a picture of an old rusted truck sitting out in the field. Do you recall that?
I do remember that. Yes.
And the gist of your message was, we need to pay attention to first-time visitors. If our trend of first-time visitors continues to decrease back at that time, this is what Branson's going to look like. Is that close?
Actually, I think I agree with your statement. Different slide, different. But yes, first-time visitation is something that we need to monitor as a leading indicator, not a lagging indicator.
Yeah. And I recall back in those days, I believe the numbers were something like we were, I think at the time, like 25%, and that's something we really need to pay attention to try to increase that number. And I believe there was a comment that said if it hit 20% or less, we're in trouble. Does that sound fair?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Well,
trouble might be a challenging, but once it gets below 20%, we need to be asking ourselves why.
Okay.
I don't think it means that Branson's headed for demise at that, because it's a higher ratio of repeat.
But it's something to pay attention to.
It is something to pay attention. Because, yes, as a leading indicator, you got to keep filling that funnel of new visitors, because eventually these other people are going to stop traveling or age out or what have you. So you do need a balance.
So we're currently running at 21%. It's not 20, but it's 21, right? And I haven't heard whispers about that's something we need to address. When back in the day, it was extremely important, right?
It's not a KPI, but it would definitely be on the list of things that I'm looking at as I look out onto the horizon. It's definitely one of those things it's like humidity in that it's not that they don't report it every night in terms of the temperature and how much rainfall, but it's important to the overall scope of things for the weatherman to know what to expect in the future if it's rising or falling. Same thing with repeat and first-time visitation. If first-time visitation got above 30%, I'd be concerned because it would mean we're not getting enough repeat.
Yeah.
If it gets below 20, I'd be concerned because it doesn't mean that we have an immediate concern, which is why I wouldn't consider it a KPI, but it is one of those dials you ought to be looking at to say, that could be a concern out 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years from now. So, yeah, it is definitely a measurement that I'd be looking at and saying, that's something we may want to pay attention to.
And it's high importance.
Yes.
Okay. It is high importance. Last year, 2019 compared to 2018, our city tourism tax was down $600,000. I'm not going to suggest that's alarming, but I think it's concerning enough to put some efforts into trying to understand why. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I would say anytime your tourism tax. Actually, I would say anytime the group of taxes. I think we measure a variety of things. But yeah, when we see the preponderance of metrics, if they start going down, yeah, it's part of the reason we're in business.
Especially when you compare it to TCD tax is up, sales tax is up, other taxes are up, tourism tax is down. I think at least warrants the question, why is that? Is that fair?
I think that's fair. Yeah.
I think if there was any alderman that were sitting in front of a room of potential voters during election year, and the question was asked, wow, why are we down $600,000 on tourism tax? There's not an alderman up here that could explain that. Yet, we're responsible for voting and approving, give or take, $3 million a year that goes out. I think at least there's some, and it's not pointing the fingers. I mean, look at what the stats and graphs you guys put up there. I think that there's some questions that are fair. We're talking about a study for $700,000 study.
It got expensive.
Jamie in the room?
I would have. I had no idea.
She's not anymore. She just had a heart attack.
Move the decimal. So to put it in perspective, our tourism tax, $600,000 loss based on a 4% tourism tax is equal to a $15 million economic impact. You agree with that?
I do agree with that.
This board has been talking about ballparks of America. What got our attention was, oh my gosh, if we don't do anything with Ballparks America, they generated $13 million of economic impact. Is that fair? We're concerned about a $13 million economic impact. And to what extremes are we going to? Well, my understanding is we're giving up 5 years of $100,000 lease income. Okay? So over 5 years, we're losing $500,000 that we would have received. First year of ballparks, we're coming out of pocket $325,000. Is that fair?
I thought it was $250,000, but
no. First year?
It is
$325,000.
Okay. Stan? It's 50
and. It's not $325,000, is it? Was it, John? I thought it wound up 50.
$250,000, $50,000 and.
No. $25,000. It's. Actually, you're going
to parking lot, the landscape.
You're going to pay $240,000 to for us to have the field use, and you're going to pay $50,000, and I think it's $25,000. So it's whatever that math is.
How much is it?
$315,000.
Okay, $315,000.
Gentlemen, if I can, I'm sorry, but we are running over here, and that's not
let
a huge deal.
Up.
Well, let me kind of summarize where I think we should get to, and I'll let you finish your comment. But basically. We're not going to make a decision here. We're in a study session. We don't make decisions in a study session. I think we have shown a great deal of interest here in this subject, and therefore administration should probably be addressed to take it. Would it be in the consensus of the board here that they should pursue this for a future meeting and have something that we can actually vote on? Is that, are we in agreement to that? We're not voting, but is anybody objecting to that? Or?
Okay, we started the process 8 months ago. And I know wheels of government don't turn real fast.
I would kind of rather talk about right now, not 8 months ago. We need to wrap this meeting up, and we need to have something come out of it of do we want them to pursue this or do we not?
Let me give a closing, just a, yes. three more sentences.
Okay.
I'm going to make them really long. A lot of commas in these.
Yeah.
Ballparks, $13 million economic impact.
And we're looking at even a potential larger economic impact from ballparks. It's not just what we're losing, it's
okay.
What the potential
is. Okay, because
there.
Just my point is the $500,000 of lost income, the $315,000 of first year, $250,000 over the next 4 years, we're at $1.8 million. We're willing to spend $1.8 million because we're looking at a $13 million impact. And let's say it grows to 15 or whatever. This industry we're talking about is a $15 million. We had a $15 million loss in tourism tax. So the economic impact of $15 million, and we're saying that we're not willing to invest $70,000 to address a $15 million economic impact, when we're willing to spend $1.8 million on a $13 million? I would like to wrap this up by saying, I don't see a downside. I would like this committee, this board, to agree to move forward and ask the staff to make recommendations of who should analyze the RFPs. That's what it's really down to.
I believe that my understanding is we will bring this item back to you as a board, and you all would have to basically authorize us to find the money to spend for that study, and then we can start with that process.
Well, and we would have to authorize that. The entire board should be in on that vote to authorize that or not authorize it. Okay, and thank you very much. And basically, I really thank you, gentlemen. I think that we should hear from you all in some fashion or summaries from them on a more regular basis, because quite frankly, our board changes. Some of the board members get older. We need to be reminded of the professionalism and work that's going into this behind the scenes, because we don't really see that even in the reports. We see some numbers, but we don't get the same impression that we did from listening to the two of you today. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate you having them come here. Major help to us. And this certainly won't be the end of this discussion. We will bring this back. Larry, at this point, I would like to ask you that personally, I would think the other aldermen would be interested also, but you've obviously got a list of items there that you feel that this RFP should address. Would you mind forwarding that to us so that we can be informed on that and be ahead of the game and shorten the discussion at the time?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Could I also ask, I know you're close. I think when we have that discussion, it would be good to have at least you and possibly you present.
We're happy to be here when we
at that board meeting. That way, you all will have that information as well.
Okay.
We're not limited on those nights.
Thank you. I appreciate it. The mayor's report. Well, the mayor's out of town. We'll expect his report when he returns. So, I'd like a motion to adjourn now.
So move. Second.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Appreciate it.